We present Kenneth Williams, Clement Freud, Tim Rice, and Giles Brandreth in just a minute. And as the minute waltz fades away, here to tell you about it is our chairman, Nicholas Parsons.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Hello, and welcome to Just a Minute. And as you've just heard, we have two guests this week who both played the game before. That is Tim Rice and Giles Brandreth. And they've joined to do battle with two of our regulars, Kenneth Williams and Clement Freud. And once again, I'm going to ask them to try and speak on the subject that I give them, and I wish them to try and do that without hesitation, repetition, or deviating from the subject. And we'll begin the show this week with Clement Freud. Clement, the subject that Ian Messiter has thought of to start the show is lawyers. Will you tell us something about that in just a minute, starting now?
Lawyers is the corporate name given to barristers and solicitors who in this country practice the law and in the United States go into politics. They are among the group of
Tim
people...
Tim Rice challenged.
There was a very strong, confident there.
Tim, I think there was hesitation, so you have a point for a correct challenge. You take over the subject of lawyers, and there are 46 and a half seconds starting now.
I am particularly well qualified to talk about this fascinating subject of lawyers because I was once an articled particle in a solicitor's office.
Clement Freud challenge.
Deviation.
Why?
Of grammar. A articled.
You had to deviate from the subject, and he didn't do that. So, Tim, you have another point for an incorrect challenge. You keep the subject, and there are 38 seconds starting now.
Unfortunately, I was required to leave this distinguished profession rather on the hurry, simply because I tore up the wrong pile of documents at a crucial moment in that firm's history. I was requested to rip into shreds in the days before they had those machines a whole pile of probates and wills which had been now caused to come out of date.
Giles Brandreth challenge.
I felt there were little moments of growing hesitation.
Yes, I think you expressed
breathing
it
problems,
well,
that's all it was.
Giles,
breathing
yes.
Problems.
And he was stuttering to a halt but didn't quite achieve it. There are 17 seconds for you, Giles, on the subject of lawyers starting now.
I come from a legal family and I once asked my papa if actors act and dance.
Tim Rice has challenged.
Repetition of par.
But I think papa is usually spelt as one word. So an incorrect challenge. Giles, you still have the subject. And 13 seconds, lawyers starting now.
If dancers dance, do solicitors solicit was the question I wanted him to answer. But of course, being a very legalistic inclination, he sat back, donned his marvellous wig, which had belonged to his pater, and said...
Well, when Ian Messiter blows his whistle, it tells us that 60 seconds is up, and whoever is speaking at that moment gains an extra point. It was Giles Brandreth, so he's taken the lead at the end of that round ahead of Tim Rice, Clement Freud and Kenneth Williams.
I think Giles Brandreth's awfully good in this game, don't you, Mr. Chairman?
Extremely good.
So do I, Mr. Chairman. I must say I'm very impressed considering he's a newcomer.
Well, he's not all that new. He's played it quite a few times before, actually.
Yeah, I thought success. I ought to say something, Mr. Chairman, as you haven't given me a subject yet. I thought I'd better get something in.
Yes. And, of course, some weeks ago, because this audience wouldn't remember because they weren't here, he did actually almost win.
Yes, that's right, speak? Mr. Chairman. Mm. Very good indeed, Mr.
Why
Chairman.
Why are you suddenly calling me Mr. Chairman?
Well, I mean, you've got to give authority to proper respect to you.
Well, I'm sorry that you can't begin the next round because we've got it down for Giles Brandreth to start. And, Giles, the subject is confidence tricks. You bring off some of those in just a minute to keep going, but will you talk on the subject starting now?
I must plead guilty to having taken part in a confidence trick or two in my time. Nothing as grand as selling off the Eiffel Tower. But a few years ago, I went to Petit France to get myself a passport, and I'm ashamed to say that I passed off a confidence trick on the people there because it was 4 o'clock on a Friday afternoon, and I needed to go to the United States of America the following morning, and I did not have the required document. And they told me, I'm afraid it's too late. You need to book this weeks in advance. So I burst into tears and said, my mother is dead. knowing full well that the dear lady was alive and well and living in Baker Street. They said, this is tragic news. And there, as I wept and cried, they assured me that they would do what they could because I had to get to her funeral in New York. And within half an hour, I am here to tell you, I had exactly the piece of paper that I needed and swept off to Heathrow Airport where...
Clement Freud is challenged.
He didn't have a visa.
I don't wish to be pedantic or indulge in semantic byplay, but you will know that you can, in fact, keep a visa from an old passport, providing you take it with your new passport and even show it to the officials.
The thing is that I don't think he was actually deviating from the subject of confidence tricks. He was telling us the one he pulled. So, Clement, I have to disagree and say there are 7.5 seconds left for you, Giles, on the subject, starting now.
There was a notorious confidence trickster who once managed to sell the Leaning Tower of Pisa to a group of Americans.
Clement Freud.
Repetition of Tower. We had the
Eiffel Tower and the Leaning Tower of Pisa. Sorry. So, Clement, you have a correct challenge there. Well, listen, 3 seconds are left on confidence tricks starting now.
Confidence tricks are something people perpetrate while others pickpocket.
Well, Clement Freud was speaking then as the whistle went, gained that extra point. He's equal with Tim Rice, who are trailing Giles Brandreth and Kenneth Williams. And Kenneth, the subject is collections. Will you tell us something about that in just a minute, starting now?
I had to take a collection once, and they said your spot will be outside the theatre which you are appearing in, so that we will get more people coming by, and your collection box will be filled. And I stood there, and I was saying, go on, give something. And one man was terribly rude. Get out of my way. I'm doing nothing. I said, well, I mean, after all, these people are in need. So am I. Get out. I've never known anything like it. And at that point, the owner of the theatre came by in an enormous Rolls Royce and got out. And, you know, that lovely sort of travelling rug around the legs was removed. And he said, hello, how are you doing with your collection? And I said, not terribly well, because this awful man had been so dreadfully impolite. He said, never mind, because you see, you must remember the old saying, virtue is its own reward. I said, that is worthy of an entry in my diary, or indeed in the Goncourt diary, which I consider equally, I mean, not more important than the diary by someone like Evening, or someone like that other one, Pete, because I mean, they're marvelous diaries, and they will be right. There's no such thing that I'm reading an open moon.
Well, that round of applause which came spontaneously from the audience was because Kenneth Williams kept going for 1.5 minutes on the subject. And he was actually challenged twice, but I cancelled the challenges because I enjoyed what he was saying. So, Kenneth, you kept going beyond the minute, so we give you 1 point for not being challenged and 1 point for speaking as the whistle went, and you had 3 at the end of that round, and you are in second place! Tim Rice, will you take the next round? The subject is discs. I'm sure you know a great deal about that with your success as a songwriter, but will you tell us something about it in just a minute, starting now?
One of the most painful afflictions that can affect anybody, young or old, is a bad back. And the reason for this is very simple. Your back part of...
Clement Freud is challenged.
Hesitation,
I agree, Clement. 51 seconds. On discs with you, starting now.
A disc is what it used to be called a record.
Tim Rice has challenged.
Did I hear correctly? I mean, that was a disc is
what
it used
to
be
called
a record.
This is. We do have people in many far-flung countries who listen and try and improve their English by listening. And I think that I would be very unfair to them if I didn't say, yes, that was deviation. So, Tim, you have a correct challenge and 47 seconds starting now.
I think, however, I will digress from the problems of the spine and get to discs that we know and love, viz. The ones that Clement Freud was trying to talk about, those which create music. Now, the new thing in discs is the compact disc. The compact disc is wonderful because...
Clement Freud has challenged.
Repetition of compact.
Yes.
It's all one word again, compact disc.
No. You're not going to get away with it. You can try, but 30 and a half seconds only on discs with you, Clement, starting now.
Perhaps the most successful company producing discs is called Virgin, because their records do not have a hole in the middle, which makes it very difficult indeed to put it onto a record player or play it in...
Charles Pendrith's challenge. Yes, Charles.
Well, on two counts. First of all, we have the repetition of record, and I also wanted to, just to save him any litigation at a later stage, to say, of course, that was all meant in fun, Mr. Branson. We know that your records are lovely ones with nice little holes in the middle.
Thank you very much, Charles. If nobody here could care less about that second point...
Well, you'd better start caring, because you might be on the end of a libel action.
No, they've got a sense of humour, and the audience show their appreciation of Clement's witty remark, but he did repeat the word record, so, Giles, you have the subject with 15 seconds, disc starting now.
I'm proud to say that I have made a disc myself of me reading my great poetry. This was made in the United...
Tim Rice has challenged.
Deviation, arrogance, all these things.
Arrogance, maybe, deviation, not at all. They were quite respectable poems.
No, it doesn't matter whether you're arrogant, it doesn't matter how you appear or put over what you're trying to say, as long as you don't deviate from the subject. So...
Did he sell more than one?
We will find out, perhaps, as he continues with 9.5 seconds starting now.
2 copies of this particular disc were sold by me to myself and to my dear mother, who very sweetly bought one in order to be able to play it night after evening.
Charles Brandreth speaking as the whistle went.
Is this before she died in Baker Street?
Charles Brandreth has, got the point for speaking as the whistle went and has increased his lead. And Charles Brandreth begins the next round. Charles, can you tell us what goes into my waste paper basket? That is the subject on the card. Will you talk on it starting now?
As you might well guess, what chiefly goes into my waste paper basket is my poetry. I sit at my desk scribbling away all day and then crumple the little bits of paper and chuck them despairingly away. Today, for example, if you looked into my waste paper basket, you would find an ode I'd written to the distinguished chairman of this particular program. Dedicated to Nicholas Parsons, it began, "Don't worry if your job is small and the rewards are few. Remember that the mighty oak was once a nut like you." Having written this epic epitaph, I decided that really it wasn't good enough, and I would have to start all over again. And I thought this time I would take as my inspiration Shakespeare, the Bard of Avon himself, and decided that I would write a miniature epic on the subject of Romeo and Juliet and the night they went out together on...
Tim Rice got in there on your... wonder. Tim, 10 seconds. What goes into my waste paper basket? That is the subject, starting now.
I put many things into my waste paper basket, but the problem that I usually find attacks me in this particular matter is that object number one every day is...
Clement Freud challenged.
It was a... I'm sorry.
If you interrupt...
Yes, he must have several points.
Not several, he gets 1 point. You interrupted
it
his...
It was nevertheless...
No, you tried to get in with 1 second ago.
No.
Well, you almost achieved it. So, Tim, you have a point for an incorrect challenge. 1 second on what goes into my waste paper basket, starting now.
Del Shannon.
And with a little help from a Freudian slip there, Tim Rice has moved into the lead, 1 ahead of Giles Brandreth, 2 ahead of Clement Freud, and a few ahead of Kenneth Williams, who begins the next round. Kenneth, the subject is Christian Doppler. Will you tell us something about him in this game, starting now?
I can't really think that the people here would be terribly interested in Christian Doppler, but nevertheless, he was an Austrian physicist, born in the 19th century, actually, and the interesting thing about him was that the Doppler principle, for which he is famous, is the measurement of noise variation, which he maintained decreased
at the same ratio as the observer retreating or approaching the source. Now.
Tim Rice has challenged.
Cobblers. The way he described the Doppler shift was not very accurate.
I thought it was extremely good, actually.
You're exactly right. Nothing about it.
Well done.
Well, sir, I should be subjected to these sort of insults from people like him.
Kenneth, I'd put up with them because you get a point every time you're interrupted for an incorrect challenge.
Insulting, I've come all the way from Great Portland.
Kenneth, it was an incorrect challenge. You are right about the Doppler principle, and Christian Doppler is the subject, and there are 28 seconds starting now.
And Christian Doppler had terrible trouble getting a visa, so he swung a great story about his aunt in Baker Street and said he had to get to New York in time for her funeral.
Tim Rice is challenged.
Well, this surely is deviation. I mean,
we don't know. He might have done it, mightn't he?
How do you know there isn't another Christian Doppler who wants to get to Baker Street?
Well, he goes to New York with an aunt in Baker. I tell you what, let the audience, because I can't really judge on this. I don't know if there's another Christian Doppler who's got an aunt in Baker Street and wants to go to New York. So will you be the final judge and arbiter? Now, if you agree with Kenneth Williams there is another Christian Doppler, will you cheer for him? And if you disagree, will you boo for Tim Rice and do it together now? I think the cheers have it. Except they said to say hooray instead of cheers. Right, so they're with you, Kenneth, as usual. And there are 19 and a half seconds on Christian Doppler starting now.
On one occasion, he did a variation on a theme with a piece of music called Romeo and Juliet. Now, it was about the night they were supposed to meet on this balcony, you know, where she says that stuff about the sun rising or the sun setting. I can't ever...
Giles, you challenged.
I'm sorry, a couple of sons there.
Yes, indeed there were. Giles, you got in with 3 seconds to go on Christian Doppler starting now.
My little poem about Christian Doppler begins in this very way.
So at the end of that round, Giles Brandreth getting an extra point, speaking as the whistle went, has now taken the lead. And Tim Rice, you begin the next round. The subject, sneezing. Can you tell us something about that in the game starting now?
The funny thing about sneezing is that you hardly ever sneeze just once. And the...
Kenneth Williams challenge.
This is the funny thing about sneezing. You only ever sneeze once. Well, it's not funny at all. I'm not laughing.
No, funny, but there's
a famous line that that Ian Hay wrote in a play called The Man Said, Was It Funny? He said, you mean funny peculiar or funny ha-ha?
Original.
Yes. So I think this was funny peculiar, and it wasn't a ha-ha, so I leave it with Tim Rice, and there are 55 seconds on sneezing starting now.
When I was a young sprig of a thing, I used to sneeze twice, never more.
Clement Freud has challenged.
Repetition.
What? Of what?
Sneezing twice.
Sneezing twice, that's right, I'm sorry. So, Clement, 51 seconds for you on the subject of sneezing starting now.
Oh, I've got it.
Yes. Tim Rice challenged.
It was a very poor
hesitation. Well done, Tim. And you've got 50 seconds on the subject of sneezing starting now.
And yet, when I was a little bit older, I found myself sneezing 3 times. Not just once, not 2 times.
Clement Freud challenged.
Repetition of times.
Yes. Yes. You said the last time you were speaking, you do the
word
times.
I admit it.
So, Clement, you've got in there with 43 seconds on sneezing starting now.
There's a very good way of stopping yourself from sneezing, which is by taking your right or left forefinger and pressing it upon your upper lip, which somehow stops you from making that noise, which in polite society is totally unacceptable. I don't know why it should be that... emitting noise
Kenneth
from
Williams
one
challenge.
Or other app.
He shuddered to a halt, didn't he?
He didn't shudder to a halt, but he did pause. Yes.
Between words.
No, you pause, Clement, and Kenneth has the subject with 24 and a half seconds sneezing starting now.
You can encourage the process of sneezing by taking snuff. And as you know, it's the tobacco derivative, and it can be awfully charming. I had a friend who used to put a little on the back finger and then pass it under the nose with tremendous elan, elegance, I would say, and always a sneeze followed. Finally.
Well, Kenneth Williams is moving up there. They're all fairly close at the end of that round, and Clement Freud begins the next round. Clement, the subject is header tanks. So would you start with it, Clement, 60 seconds now.
I went the other day to an Irish race course where an elderly female gypsy came up to me and offered me white heather for luck. Now, if I didn't have bad fortune, I wouldn't have any at all, so I decided not to purchase any. Or to put it another way, I said, no header tanks.
Kenneth, I was interrupted.
There was a long pause, wasn't there?
There was, yes, because you were waiting for his applause.
Yes.
So, Kenneth, you have the subject with 39 seconds on header tanks starting now.
These tanks, as you know, were designed by Alexander Hedder and...
Clement Freud.
But it was quite clear that I didn't know.
It doesn't matter.
You can't say as you know.
Well, he can start it. He uses it as a figure of speech. You may not know, but some people may. He was using it as a figure of speech, which is not deviation in just a minute. And there are 37 seconds. Header tanks, Kenneth, starting now.
And the idea behind them was a light construction capable of moving at great speed. Now, in the event of a push, which is what the enemy makes into your territory when invasion is imminent, this is the tactic.
Tim Rice is challenged.
It doesn't make a push when invasion is imminent. It makes it when invasion is actually happening.
Oh, you're right. That's brilliant, you know. I mean, that is my... He's not just a pretty face, is he?
No, even with the beard. Tim Rice, yes, what a clever challenge. There are 19 seconds for you on header tanks, starting now.
I once owned a horse called Header Tanks, and it wasn't a particularly successful one, which is why many people in this beautiful building, the Westminster Theatre, won't have heard of it. But I think it's well worth talking about now. Header Tanks first ran at Worcester in 1963. It came a good fourth behind three extremely speedy nags, and I was not at all disappointed in its results. So we...
Well, Ian Rice's horse kept him going to the whistle when gained that extra point, and he now has increased his lead at the end of the round. Giles Brandreth, will you take the next round? The subject, wisecracks. You produced a few of those in your time, some against me. But will you talk on the subject in just a minute, starting now?
Wisecracks could be a newspaper headline about the partner of Eric Morecambe, or it could indeed be a turn of phrase or witty saying, such as the great one from Anthony Burgess along the lines of, laugh and the world chuckles with you, snore and you sleep alone. Now that, to me, is a perfect example of a wisecrack, because there is there both a jest and a hidden truth, whereas all too often wisecracks are merely banal cracker mottos of the kind that when one might say of the Queen, what does she do when she burps? She issues a royal pardon. Now, some people might think that this was a witticism of a sort, but I do not consider it to be a wisecrack because there is no fundamental gravitas to it, and it is essential when considering wisecracks that one has both piss and moment, and speaking of the latter, let me give you what I think is perfect.
Oh, a thunderous round of applause for Giles Brandreth, well deserved, taking the subject and keeping us entertained with it, which is also very difficult, and without being interrupted, well, without deviating, hesitating, or repeating himself, gains an extra point for speaking as the whistle went, and a bonus point for not being interrupted, and he's one behind our leader, Tim Rice, just ahead of Clement Freud and Kenneth Williams. Oh no, it's Kenneth Williams in third place. For once, Clement Freud is in fourth place. Kenneth, it's your turn to begin. The subject, Kenneth, is old wives' tales. Will you tell us something about that subject in the game, starting now?
A cold key down your back will alleviate shock. The other one was poultices made of cold tea, which was...
A Clement Freud is challenged.
Two colds. Repetition.
The old, yes. There were two colds, weren't there? I'm sorry, you just got going as well, but... 52 seconds for you, Clement, on the subject of old wives' tales, starting now.
This is quite absurd. Old wives don't have tales. Rats and mice, lambs, cows, horses, all sorts of animals.
Kenneth Williams has challenged.
Yes, I thought hesitation. It was deviation and hesitation, actually.
Was it? Oh, well done. So you get the subject back, Kenneth, with 42 seconds on old wives' tales starting now.
What is curious is so often what appears to be an old wives' tale has such a degree of truth that modern medicine recognizes it. In the West Country, they can all cry, clap on and full of cobwebs for a cut or an abrasion. It's been proved since that these things which spiders weave do contain enough cleansing material to not only heal the wound, but to perform a kind of natural sterilization. And I think we should all stand in awe of these openings.
So, Kenneth Williams cleverly and with great skill kept going until the whistle went, gained that extra point, and you probably know the result. But let me tell you, it was a very equal contest. First of all, let me say they all contributed marvellously in equal quantity. Clement Freud was only 1 point behind Giles Brandreth, who was only 1 point behind Tim Rice, and he was only 1 point behind this week's winner, Kenneth Williams. In spite of what he often says, he came to triumph this week. We hope you've enjoyed this edition of Just a Minute, and we'll want to tune in again the same time next week when we take the air and we play this delightful and sometimes ridiculous but enjoyable game. Until then, from all of us here, goodbye.
The chairman of Just a Minute was Nicholas Parsons. The program was devised by Ian Messiter and produced by Pete Atkin.
We've all got our eyes on it, so you keep your hands off it. This, in this particular case, it was an expert. So I said, no, I know it's not the phrase that you've just used, but I happen to like it for what it's worth anyway. So I went away and sat down when the particular painting by the painter I mentioned from Northern England, when he came up, I started
Kevin
my Freud reading.
Challenge.
Sorry.
It was awfully boring, wasn't it?
No, I don't think so. I want to know whether he bought it or not, and whether it really was in that Houghton Grimshaw.
Well, there's only 4 seconds left for
him to tell. A repetition of painter and painting.
Yes, see, he did repeat those things, Clement, so you can have him on that. And 3.5 seconds on auctions with you, starting now.
Reading newspapers, it would now appear that people who go to auctions no longer have to buy.
Freud was speaking as the whistle went. Gain the extra point is equal in the lead with Peter Jones at the end of the round. And Peter, your turn to begin. The subject, cockroaches. Will you tell us something about cockroaches in just a minute, starting now?
Well, they're not particularly attractive, not as pets anyway. But I do seem to remember the head of the catering department of a London hospital describing them as nourishing and saying that they had quite a lot of protein. They weren't introduced into the meals he was serving intentionally. They just kind of dropped into them, just like the birds' droppings that fell into the milk puddings at another...
William Franklin. Right.
Repetition of fell into.
They did. They dropped before, they fell into. No,
that's right.
They dropped and they fell in. We had...
dropped and then I said fell in. I mean, it was repeated.
Action replay, really, don't we, to actually sort that
well,
out? No, I do. In that case, the hearing again. It's got very dodgy lately. Yeah.
You could have had it for hesitation, but I'm afraid it's too late now.
No, I wanted to tell him about the Atkinson Grimshaw.
Yes,
he was
and I would like to hear about it.
Yes,
well,
I mean,
tell us
obviously,
now if you like. Did you buy it or not?
Clayford was very bored by it, but I must tell you, it was an Atkinson Grimshaw.
Did you
I
buy it?
I did buy it.
Yes.
I took it somewhere, and it was valued for 17 times what I paid for it. So I was rather
how marvellous.
And it
so why are you bothering to appear on Just a Minute?
Well, I've been looking at this painting for so long, I just like a break.
Yeah.
I get away from the house, you know, because I keep looking at this lovely painting.
Let's go back to Just a Minute. Peter, the subject is Atkinson Grimshaw. No, it isn't. It's the subject is cockroaches. Quite different. 32 seconds left, starting now.
17 times as much as he paid. Anyway, this...
repetition of what I'd said, actually.
He can say anything that you said, but he mustn't repeat it. But you could have had him for deviation, because what he said has got nothing to do with cockroaches.
Yes, right, I'm having him for deviation.
As you're our guest, Bill, I will allow that deviation and give you 27 seconds left on cockroaches starting now.
When the typhoons of Hong Kong assemble, they cloud in across the island. At the end of this particular weather...
Peter Jones's challenge. I thought there was a hint of hesitation.
A hint? I was given the story by my wife just before I left home, and I hadn't had time to practice.
Listen, were you fed up with your Atkinson
Grimshaw? I don't want you to drag your personal life into this.
Peter Jones, you have 17 seconds on cockroaches starting now.
I've been talking about cockroaches, it seems, all evening. Anyway, these little creatures... The black ones, particularly, are fairly unpleasant if you adopt a human standard in judging their appearance. But if one was a cockroach oneself...
So Peter Jones is speaking as the whistle went, gained other points in the round, and he's in a positive lead at the end of the round, and we come to Kenneth Williams, from whom we have not yet heard enough in this show. And the subject is very apt, Kenneth. It is When I Do My Nut, which you have been known to do in just a minute, but when you talk on the subject, starting now.
I have a wing nut, thank goodness, because it unscrews very easily, and I call it mine because when I went there, it didn't exist. I opened the flap with a sort of ventilation thing to let the air in, and I couldn't get behind to clean it. So I removed it and made a little hole, and this wing nut goes in, you see.
Peter Jones' challenge.
Repetition of wing nut.
Oh, yes, that's right, because it's not on the card. When I Do My Nut is on the card, so winged is a repetition. And, Peter, you have a correct challenge. And 33 seconds are left. When I Do My Nut, starting now.
Well, I don't very often do it. But I have to be driven to some form of... You know, I really have to be pushed very hard.
Clement Freud.
Repetition.
Yes, indeed. I don't know what... Oh, but
have
it's
to be, have to be...
Yes, that's right. I mean the phrase. Right. 24 seconds with you, Clement, on When I Do My Nut, starting now.
The French call it Quand Je Fais Le Noisette, and the Germans Wenn ich meine Nuss tue. But actually, When I Do My Nut is an expression meaning... When I behave like Kenneth Williams, jumping up and down and shouting and screaming and behaving in an extraordinary fashion, such as would be frowned upon at any gentleman's club in Pall Mall and throughout the week.
Clement Freud, speaking as the whistle went, gained the extra point, and he's now moving up on Peter Jones, our leader. William Franklin's in third place. Kenneth is in fourth place. Clement begins the next round. The subject is keeping a diary. Will you tell us something on that subject, Clement, starting now?
I can't tell you a great deal about keeping a diary, and it'll probably last for 60 seconds. If you write about Adrian Mole, then you are incredibly successful and rich and become wealthy and have shows on in the West End. But the ordinary keeping of a diary is something which most people begin and very few finish up with. Politicians in particular tend to write words and notes and asterisks and messages on pieces of paper and preserve them in case some publisher should one day go up to them and say, "Have you ever kept a diary?" In which case we will buy it and publish it for a great deal of money. And politicians...
Kenneth Williams.
I thought it was a hesitation.
It was a hesitation.
It was the end of a sentence and the beginning of a new paragraph.
It's an awfully long pause.
But in just a minute, you can't pause before you begin the next sentence, Clement. So Kenneth had a correct challenge. And as a diarist yourself, Kenneth, will you tell us something about the subject with 19 seconds left, starting now?
It is a fascinating subject. I've confided to my diary some of the most intimate things which I never say to people. And when it came to actually publishing it, because contrary to Clement Freud, the diary of a nobody was an enormous success and continues to have reprint after more editions.
So, Kenneth Williams, then, speaking as the whistle went, has now gained points and is in the third place with William Franklin behind Clement Freud and Peter Jones in that order. And, William, your turn to begin. The subject, sexist advertising. Will you tell us something on that subject, starting now?
I think it's probably almost impossible to accept that advertising is sexist, because in each advert there is something for every single person. It doesn't particularly separate it. If it was for bras, it could be for ladies, or it could be for fellows. It could be for the viewer to take his own particular attitude towards it. Cakes and ales. It could be for either members of the human race. It makes no difference.
Clement has challenged.
I think the whole idea of...
It could be that he repeated himself.
It could be, yes.
It could very well be that.
It could be indeed.
It could be that I got lost.
30 seconds, 36 seconds on sexist advertising, Clement, with you starting now.
I'm rather concerned about all the people who worry about sexist advertising. It seems nowadays that if you simply mention something particular to a woman, then ladies come along and say how disgraceful this is sexist. Half the people in this world, if you look at them carefully, notice that they have non-protruding Adam's apples and are therefore females of the species. And yet, push them on television in the picture and make them wash up or do any of the normal things that folk do.
Peter Jones challenged.
Hesitation.
Yes, and he talked about the washing up. He hesitated. No doubt he's done it himself. So, there are 4 seconds for you, Peter, on sexist advertising starting now.
What they mean is pretty girls sitting on the bonnets of cars.
So, Peter Jones has increased his lead with that extra point, speaking as the whistle went, and he takes the next subject, which is anyone in the third row. So would you like to talk? Not, they're all in the third row of the theatre here at the Westminster Theatre in London, all in the third row, looking very self-conscious at the moment. But actually, the subject is anyone in the third row. So, Peter, talk on it if you can, starting now.
Well, the people in the third row look very much like the people in the second and fourth, as far as I can imagine. If one examines them perhaps closely, I can see one who might conceivably be an international terrorist. And then there's a couple of sex maniacs, and then there's someone who's trying to give up smoking, biting their nails they have been earlier on in the evening, and somebody who would prefer to be sitting in the front row because they've got their hand cupped over their ear and they can't hear too well. Many people probably wouldn't want to, but there are vacancies in the front row, so if there's anyone in the third row who'd like to move forward and better themselves and perhaps be in a better position to get the autograph.
William Franklin.
Repetition of better.
Better themselves and position.
Yes.
William, you have 14 seconds. Anyone in the third row, starting now.
Thick, well-developed thighs in rugby, and in the third row of any theatre that I have ever sat in, I think are a must. In order to be able to survive the pressures from behind in...
William Franklin was speaking as the whistle went and gained the extra point. He didn't get many on the last time he was our guest, but he's got quite a few on this occasion. He's only one behind Clement Freud. He's ahead of Kenneth Williams. Peter Jones is still our leader, and Kenneth Williams begins the next round. And the subject, handle. Will you tell us something about that, Kenneth, in just a minute, starting now?
I once had a very tricky situation to handle in a theatre when a lady was auditioning. She was a musician and told the producer that with her harmonica she could render Chopin, Tchaikovsky, and she added, "I'm a jazz band with Handel. He's right up my alley." And the producer says, "Where your mouth organ should be," and there was a terrible scene. I had to get her out because these awful bodied palms were in the way. And another thing was, we had a piper who was auditioning, if you please, for
for the Southern and Scottish. Well, I don't know.
William Franklin, Charles.
Hesitation.
Yes, I think he did hesitate. It wasn't quite clear where he was going then. 17 seconds for you, William, on Handel, starting now.
Well, Handel's Perrier music, as it's better known across the water, found favour with French society in the 19th century and eventually led to far less kidney stones on the Rhine. This is where that particular river touches the borders of France.
At the end of that round, William Franklin, our guest, has moved into second place, only just 2 points behind Peter Jones, our leader, and Clement Freud in third place begins the next round. The subject, Clement, is banks. Will you tell us something about those in this game, starting now?
Banks are immensely overrated institutions in which to keep money, and I would like to say one or two words about mattresses, which are infinitely more suitable. Those things that you
Kenneth
put
Williams
on...
was challenged.
What deviation? You're supposed to talk about banks, not mattresses.
Mattresses? I thought he said actresses. I was trying to work it out. I couldn't understand it.
Clement, I agree with, disagree with Kenneth. You had the subject. 48 seconds left. Banks, starting now.
I want to tell all you misguided people in the audience who keep your cash in a bank that a mattress remains open 24 hours a day. Never ever insults the depositor.
Clement, I'm sorry, Clement. While the audience were laughing and clapping, Kenneth Williams pressed his buzzer.
Yes, repeated mattresses.
I did not.
I said keeping money in mattresses, and I said a mattress is never rude to you.
Yes, because I thought he said actresses.
That's right.
So actually, Clement, you are correct. You did use the word mattresses the second time, and you continue with 37 seconds on banks starting now.
I think it's probably time that I talked about banks. They're frightfully good places who look after your money, who sell you shares, options, deals, find someone to finance your business, and generally insult you unless you're terribly nice to them. The extraordinary thing about banks is that ladies and gentlemen believe they ought to dress up before they go in, as if it were a church or some other establishment of note. And I do want to say to anyone who is still listening, and I realize there may not be many people now, that if you're wearing dungarees or no shirt or you haven't done your hair, go to a bank.
Clement Freud started with the subject of banks, and in spite of interruptions for which he gained points, of course, and won for speaking as the whistle went, he has a number of points that round. He's now equal in the lead with Peter Jones. William Franklin, your turn to begin the subject, mosquitoes. Will you tell us something on that subject, starting now?
The year was 1940. I was a student in Lancaster at the Regent Street Polytechnic, which had been evacuated. In the back streets of that town in Lancashire were Waring and Gillow, who made furniture, but at this particular time, looking through the window, we saw the shapes of aircraft, which was unusual because three-ply wood was being laminated one surface to another by the carpenters who were working inside. Within a few weeks, we were to discover that this furniture factory was producing the great mosquito aircraft, which was later to become the night fighter, the day fighter, the light bomber that was to be one of our saviors in the Second World War.
Hurrah.
Now, what?
I said hurrah.
Hurrah. Well, it turned out to be quite a big hurrah, as it happens.
Peter Jones challenged you during the hurrah.
Yes. Hesitation.
Yes, but as he was stopped in mid-flow, I don't
no,
think...
No, no. I accept it was a hesitation.
No, you did repeat yourself many times, but nobody challenged you for that for some reason. They're being very generous to you, William. So you have another point.
Just in the story.
You were interrupted, and you have 15 seconds on mosquitoes starting now. Peter Jones, a challenge.
Hesitation.
Yes.
I thought he was going to start. I'm sorry, I thought Peter was going to start.
William Franklin, isn't it?
And then I thought he'd interrupted me earlier on.
No, it was Clement Freud who interrupted you.
Almost confusing evenings I've ever spent in my life.
Benefit of our listeners,
there were
an
offer this evening I could have done.
You could have sold the Atkinson Grimshaw and gone to the south of France for a couple of weeks.
I probably will as soon as I get home.
Right, so Peter Jones, hesitation is correct. 14 seconds for you on mosquitoes starting now.
I suffered terribly from mosquito bites. Clement Freud.
Deviation.
Why?
He didn't begin with well. He always begins with well.
Give Clement a bonus point for a nice challenge. Peter Jones a point for an incorrect challenge. And Peter keeps the subject of mosquitoes. 13 seconds starting now.
My legs swell up in the most appalling way, as if I have elephantiasis. But there is an electronic device operated by a battery, or I think you can latch it onto the mains. And this is a sound.
So Peter Jones is keeping going and increasing his lead. He's just ahead of Clement Freud, and he's just ahead of William Franklin, and Kenneth Williams, for once, is trailing a little. Peter, your turn to begin. The subject is greed. Will you tell us something about that in just a minute, starting now?
Well, one notices this at auctions. You find the place littered with actors who are eyeing all the articles, particularly the pictures, and hoping that they're going to get them cheap, even though it may be a widow woman who is selling her homestead up in order to emigrate and work in a poorer country. Some thespian, or worse still, panelist, purchases this picture and sells it for 17 times as much. And so the wretched woman whose husband has died and she has children to support at school...
The wretched woman has actually reappeared.
I didn't say wretched woman before.
I said widow.
You said wretched woman who was a widow.
She was. You repeated the word woman, whatever.
I would have thought, Bill, it would have been more becoming of you to keep silent and let this sordid story come to an end as soon as possible. But if you insist on hearing every
detail...
It's
been so moving.
Right.
I've been so
Bill,
touched by
William
it,
Franklin.
So good-ridden that I'm very happy for you
right.
to continue.
William, no, you continue.
If the woman would like to write to me privately, I'll have a word with Mr. Franklin.
Right. William Franklin, it's you have a correct challenge. You get a point, of course. 16 seconds are left for greed, starting now.
The thought of a beige meringue is something that makes the juices fulminate for me more than practically anything else. It is inevitably a form of greed, but it is something developed as a child at my mother's knee when she whisked in a...
So at the end of that round, William Franklin, our guest, was speaking. As the whistle went, he gained another point. He's now equal in second place with Clement Freud. They're trailing Peter Jones, who's still our leader, and Kenneth Williams in fourth place is going to begin the next round. Kenneth, the subject, trombones. Will you tell us something about those in this game, starting now?
They do put one in the mind of the brass band atmosphere, don't they? And the lovely song, 76 trombones in the big parade, 110 cornets by the air. It's a delightful evocation of another time and perhaps a different place. I knew a trombonist, and he pulled the thing out and forth with such enormous panache that I said to him afterwards, I'm amazed you don't feel a bit of disgust, because an awful lot of spit does go in. He said, I don't mind, it's something you sort of live with, you see. And of course, in the last analysis, these idiosyncrasies which attach to all kinds of instruments, quite apart from the trombone. Although we shouldn't be talking about anything except the trombone.
Well, Kenneth Williams started with the subject of trombones, and Kenneth, you get a point for speaking as the whistle went, you get a bonus point for not being interrupted, and you finish up in fourth place. There is no
justice in just a minute. Let me tell you that the other three did extremely well, not only with what they contributed, but with the points they gained. And our guest, William Franklin, came back to triumph. Of course, you wouldn't know it in the audience here, because you weren't here when he was playing it the other week. But he came in second place, equal with Clement Freud, our many-time winner. And they were both behind this week's winner, our delightful and witty Peter Jones. Enjoyed this edition of Just a Minute, and we'll want to tune in again the same time next week when we all take the air and we play this delightful game. Till then, from all of us here, goodbye.
The chairman of Just a Minute was Nicholas Parsons. The program was devised by Ian Messiter and produced by Pete Atkins.